You were on mute, I believe. I believe you're still on mute. If you look on the lower left-hand side, if you move your pointer, there should be a little microphone.
Okay.
Got it. All right. Thank you for being here with us today. We do appreciate that. Would you like to provide any statement to the board or any opening comments, and then we may have questions for you?
Yes. I'm uncomfortable in this format. I don't feel that it's private. And this is mainly why I'm not comfortable. Another reason I've been up for two nights, just PTSD stuff. No sleep.
All right. And sir, just let me, if I could just, this is considered a public meeting. And so that's the format we have to follow.
I'm just saying I'm uncomfortable with that. So I'm not criticizing.
Okay, no, I just wanted to explain why it is this way. And also just where we need to be also very careful about any diagnoses or any medical information.
Yes.
We want to provide that in an open form. If we need to, we'd go into an executive session to do that. So again, if you'd like to provide any opening comments, we would appreciate that.
Yes. On our second visit, he spent some time informing me how he had to type these notes up for TriWest to pay him. Now, I didn't ask for this information. He just came out and told me. He said, it's a hassle. He said, the veterans are the only ones that I have to do this for, and I have one other than you. And it's just, it isn't convenient. So he informed me of this. And I just said, fine. I was not there to discuss billing or type notes. When I did ask him for these records, he sent me handwritten notes that are, I can't read them. Some of it is simply unreadable. Other words in there, I simply can't decide what they are, so I can't get an accurate reading. When I asked him to send me the typewritten notes, the ones he sent to TriWest, he said he never did it. So he informed me that he did, and then he informed me that he didn't. TriWest requires typewritten notes that are legible in order to be paid. This is not secret information, and this is all I asked him for so I could get a better understanding of his diagnosis for me, because I wasn't really informed of a diagnosis. And this is my motivation. This is my motivation. I want to get a better understanding of what he believes is all complications of the reason I'm seeing him, the reason that I am seeing him. And I didn't get any of that. I'm very dissatisfied. And I want those records. I want them all. And I would like them hand typed up so that I could read them.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions from the board members? Dr. Gill?
Yes. Sir, Mr. DC, were you subject to, at the beginning of treatment, regarding a discussion of what kind of treatment you would be subject to and what might you expect from the treatment that you received in the form of an informed consent?
We had discussed a few things about the vibrations in the hand, and I didn't understand it, but I was willing to go through it. It was something new, and it was something I hadn't tried before, and out of desperation, I was willing to do this, and did.
And after you had indicated to Dr. Carlson that you could not read, the notes that he sent to you, did you consider maybe having a discussion with him over the phone or at another session about the about what was stated in the notes, so that you could get some clarification regarding your initial question?
I informed him that I was not able to read the notes and that I would like the typewritten notes that he had told me he was writing up. He's the one that told me this stuff. And he said he didn't have them. And so you can see where the man tells me this is what he's doing. And then he said, I'm not doing that. This has caused some real concern and confusion on my part.
Well, sir, it seems like your interest in the typewritten notes, it would seem to me, would be secondary to just a clarification of what Dr. Carlson's assessment of your condition was.
He didn't give me an assessment.
Right. I wonder if that could have been resolved in some way. I'm just trying to explore that. You know, the board is going to perhaps hear from you that he said this and he may say something else. And so it seems to me the deeper question is not whether there were typewritten notes. The deeper question is whether you could receive satisfaction regarding his assessment of your condition and whether that could be accomplished in a number of different ways, you know, without your having to come before a board.
I was wanting something like this. He simply wouldn't talk to me about it. That's all. He wouldn't talk to me about it. He was being evasive. He was talking low in a whisper at times. I couldn't understand what he was saying. I was uncomfortable with the treatment at that time because this is one time I thought maybe he really wasn't being straight with me. Why would somebody not want to answer my questions? Or when they seemingly did, it was in a real hushed voice that I couldn't hear straight. I couldn't hear clearly. This to me was to have said, listen, you need to speak up, buddy. He's a doctor. He knows how to communicate, I'm sure, better than I do. And I am new at this. I am not well versed in how these things need to go. I put all my trust in him, all of it. I was looking for my cues from him on what to do. I didn't want to be rude. I didn't want to be the kind of guy that got in there and told him how to run the show, because this is something I don't know how to do, this treatment plan.
I appreciate that, sir. Thank you. That's all the questions that I have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Sorry, I was going to sneeze. I do not have any questions at this time.
I do. When you mentioned that, you know, he had the doctor had a hushed voice, it was hard to understand. Did you let him know you were having a hard time understanding him?
I said, what?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said, what?
Oh, so you did ask him when you couldn't understand what he said to have him repeat it or to clarify?
Yes, I said what, but I felt he said, this is over, we're done. And that door slammed shut. I didn't know why. He didn't really say exactly why, except that he didn't think it was working. And, you know, maybe he's right. I don't know. I don't think I made any progress with this at all. Phil, I made none.
Right.
And I want to get a better understanding of what he was doing during this treatment. This is why I want to read the notes.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that. Are there any other questions from other board members? All right, hearing none, I appreciate you being here today. We're going to now talk with the doctor. Dr. Carlson, you're with us today?
Yes, good morning.
Yes, thank you. And DC, if you could mute your phone that would, or tablet, that would be great. Your computer, thank you. Dr. Carlson, thank you for being here today. We're going to give you an opportunity to say some opening comments if you'd like, and then we may have some questions for you.
Sure. It seems that there was either some misunderstanding or addition to comments that I must have made, but I deny ever having promised any sort of typewritten notes to him or to TriWest at any time. That was simply not an issue. The first session, as you know, in the documentation, TriWest asked for simply documentation of the first session that he had met with me and was continuing to meet with me. That was my intent, that is. And I presume it had something to do with the fact that he was being reimbursed for his sessions, for his travel from Bisbee to the office. In any event, I simply told him that I had furnished those materials to TriWest, and they were my handwritten notes, of course, as you've read. And that's all I have in my records. I have not furnished a typewritten report to anyone. All billing is handled by the billing service, as typical. And none of that requires a report on what was done in the session or services provided. It only has to do with the diagnosis and the code for treatment. I was never asked to speak more loudly that I recall. I would have done that. I provided with an extensive explanation of what we were doing and why we were doing it in various terms. That is in accord with the EMDR protocol, as you may know. And I spent 1 to 2 sessions doing that with him on the front end. At no point did he say he didn't understand why we were doing it. In fact, he came to me for EMDR services, and that's what I provided. It was simple as that. I think we're off the subject of the complaint, however, when we get into other aspects of his not understanding what treatment he was getting or why it was not successful, because that was not the nature of his complaint. His complaint is only that he didn't receive the typewritten reports that I had allegedly sent to TriWest. So I think we ought to restrict ourselves to what is actually being what has actually been presented in the complaint here. That's all I'm prepared to discuss today. And that's all I have to say at this time, but I'm surely open to questions of any kind.
All right. Thank you very much for those comments. Dr. Gill, I'll start with you. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead. Would you like, do you have any questions?
I do have a few. One is regarding the record and the intake process. I did not know, and perhaps I missed it, but do you complete an informed consent with all of your intakes?
The registration form contains signed consent regarding insurance claims and legal fees and collection costs and the HIPAA forms. But beyond that, no, I don't do normally an informed consent regarding to the procedures. I didn't know that was necessary. I've never had anyone ask for that, or that it's never been an issue. Everybody seems to understand what's going on, and everybody participates usually quite responsibly, and I rarely have any difficulties. in terms of procedures that I'm using.
And have you recently, or how have you recently reviewed, or when was the last time you reviewed the APA ethical principles of psychologists and code of conduct?
Well, actually, I reviewed them today again. So, did I miss that?
Yeah, informed consent is a required component. And I actually, in these cases, because I'm not a psychologist, I do represent more of the public. I am a behavior analyst, so I'll let Dr. Gill elaborate when he gets a chance. But my other question, and again, Dr. Gill may piggyback on some of this, is as far as normally with treatment, is it a normal practice for you to not develop a written treatment plan?
It's not my practice to state it in any of my records, because normally when I'm doing EMDR treatment, the plan is pretty clear, and I follow the protocol. I even label aspects of the EMDR that we are doing. Typically, EMDR 1, for example, refers to the education of the client, developing relaxation procedures, if it's possible, and so forth. But I do not, in my notes, lay out a treatment plan per se.
And we can't discuss the exact diagnosis. However, in your response back to the board, you did mention that there was a diagnosis provided. Did you do any formal and again, I'm probably not the best to understand which exact assessments would be used, but any formal, like norm-referenced assessments specific to coming to the conclusion of that diagnosis? And again, I have to reiterate, we can't discuss what that diagnosis was. And where did you document the findings of that diagnosis?
This is hard without the diagnosis, but I did not do any more formal assessments in his case. I wasn't asked to do an assessment of the possibility of
we just don't want to mention any diagnosis or potential diagnosis.
Okay, I apologize. So, therefore, I didn't do any assessments of that kind. I often do with my clients, and if I had done them, they would have been included in your report.
So because you did provide, again, in the response to board staff, you did provide a specified diagnosis that you stated, that you stated to board staff. It has not been stated here. What was your process for coming up then with that diagnosis, and where did you document your clinical findings for that diagnosis?
I didn't document it. I generally have been in practice for so long, most of this is pretty automatic with me. I know the bases for the diagnoses, and I have generally very few because of the restricted nature of my practice. So I don't put into my notes the bases for my diagnoses.
Excellent. Thank you. That is all of the questions that I have at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Dr. Gill?
Yes. Dr. Carlson. Pardon me. Do you recall the last time you took an ethics course in which the issue of informed consent was discussed?
Oh boy, no, been a long time.
When was the last time you took an ethics course?
Oh, I have to do them regularly, but that particular, you know, for our credits, but that particular issue has not come up. And obviously I need some additional information about that.
Okay, yes. It sounds like you're reviewing the standards, which is good. There is an ethical standard, informed consent, that requires that the patient be clear about the treatment and appropriate expectations for care. But maybe the other issue is, it just seems to me that this issue with DC could have been resolved without her having to go through the board today. And what DC said was that you literally slammed the door on him. We don't know. I mean, you may see it differently, but was there a way to resolve this? I mean, he couldn't read your notes. He was, he was insisting on something typewritten, but could you have just addressed the issue with him, maybe at another session, saying, this is my assessment of you. This is how the condition that you're dealing with. It just seems to me this could have been resolved, and that you kind of missed an opportunity there. Do you have a comment on that?
Well, quite frankly, in thinking about this case after his second call, I thought about that, but quite honestly, I felt he was so belligerent and so determined that I was somehow lying to him about having provided so-called typewritten reports to other people that I hadn't. I felt that further interaction with him was probably not going to be fruitful. And I would note that he'd never asked for personal recapitulation or typewritten summaries of these notes for his purposes. He asked for things that I had submitted as if he were suspicious that somehow I was putting reports in about him that were not in his best interest. So if he had simply asked for a typewritten summary of, or a computerized, in this case, summary of his condition, I guess I would have done that. As for meeting with him again, I'm not sure that it would have been worthwhile.
Well, any means to an end, you know, maybe not face-to-face, a telephone call, you know, anything to, you know, I mean, he has a legitimate concern to want to know more about his condition and your experience and expertise in this area.
Yes, I agree with that.
Well, that's all the questions I have. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Doctor, can you explain what you feel like a patient documentation should look like? I mean, in the sense that if you were to open it up and I was, you know, someone to go through it, should it not just speak for itself in the sense that there seems to be some gaps here in regards to informed consent, in regards to how, you know, the diagnosis was determined? You know, there's just a diagnosis listed. It doesn't speak for itself. Can you maybe elaborate on your philosophy on that or your perception?
I have never been asked to provide anything additional, so I've never had any feedback on my notes, quite honestly. And in the absence of that, I have always documented my cases as I've done here. And if asked later to provide reports, I've never had any difficulty with that. It's simply that's just been my standard of practice. And I have to say that I miss this requirement of having an informed consent regarding the actual therapy. So that is my error.
And just one other question. DC had mentioned that he believes that you stated that TriWest requires your written notes or documentation. Can you explain what TriWest requires you to provide them?
They sent I thought it was in here. I didn't review all of this, but they simply asked me to document the first session that he had actually showed up and that we had had the session.
And is that that's typed out? That was provided to DC?
Well, if it's not in the file, I'd have to go back and look, then it was by a request sent by the VA. And quite honestly, I don't remember. The VA community services sometimes, and there I'm a little fuzzy on this, it could have been that the VA was asking for it. But I'd have to go back and look.
But
the VA Community Center, I've noticed, often checks to see if the client has come to the first session and they want to document that. After that, they have not asked for other materials.
So TriWest as a policy does not require you to type out your notes and provide them to them.
That's correct.
Okay. Board members, are there any further questions for Dr. Carlson?
Yes, Dr. Carlson. With all due respect to Mr. DC, I understand that he's been in treatment in the past. Were you subject to any information regarding his past treatment?
Yes.
And that wasn't in your file at all. I didn't see
all of the documentation from the VA was in my file and with a note on it.
Well, there was a statement from the VA. Yes, that's correct.
The treatment was in the VA. That's correct.
And my understanding from reading it is that Mr. DC had some challenges in his former therapies. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. Yes.
He was going to be a challenging patient based upon the documentation. Would he not have been?
Well, I take every person as they come and try not to prejudge the case.
Well, it's not so much, I mean, that's documented.
Yeah, but
it's not about judgment, about prejudgment. It's there in writing, somebody else's opinion, not yours. Yes. Mm-hmm. But do you take that into consideration or do you ignore it?
I didn't ignore it, but I just, I figure there are lots of other circumstances may have been going on at the time of that treatment, and I'm willing to take anyone in under the current conditions, and I trust what they say by and large, and I go forth with a pretty positive attitude, frankly, about clients up front.
So. Are there times when you consult with colleagues about a case that you find challenging?
Yes.
You do this?
Yes.
Okay. And when you do it, do you document it in your notes?
Yes, I suspect, but I didn't do that in this case. I document phone calls, I document emails and discussions, but quite honestly, I don't need to have them very often. So it doesn't happen very often.
That's all I have. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. Any further questions for Dr. Carlson? All right, hearing none, the board now is going to go into deliberations. Again, this is a time just for the board members to discuss amongst themselves. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead. Would you like to start the discussion?
Madam Chair, it does appear that Dr. Carlson has been in practice in good standing for quite some time. My concerns at this point are just that some of the practices may be outdated, specific to what's required by the ethical practices of psychologists at this time. I think there's a huge, and I think we see this sometimes, there's a huge difference between what is required of best standards of practice or what's required by our certifying boards or licensing boards or professional groups that come out and say, here's our code of conduct and our ethics, versus what funding requirements have. And so contracts don't necessarily, in my opinion, don't necessarily delegate what should or decide what should or should not be kept in medical records. And that the reality of it is that oftentimes when it comes to the funding sources are will lean back on other sources when it comes to audits and other things, but they may not necessarily require those things for the provision of services because what they're requiring is for the standards of practice to be met. And so in this particular case, a couple of the concerns that I have, one is specific to the informed consent. I think the need to incorporate informed consent into practice is most definitely something that is evident and needs to be addressed. But also the other thing, and I'll specify it's, you know, in record keeping and fees on the Professional and Ethical Code of Conduct 6.01, documentation of professional and scientific work and maintenance of records, that, you know, the purpose of creating and disseminating records specific to your professional work isn't just to facilitate services that you're providing in the future, but also that additional professionals are able to pick up and you know, if something were to happen during practice, if the individual were to change treating physicians, that the other doctor is able to pick up those records and not lose ground and not lose time. And so I think that that's most notably for me, the two issues that I foresee in this case. It does appear that the medical record was provided in a timely fashion. However, I do think the medical record falls short the standards of practice that are expected of psychologists, and again, not to keep totally putting Dr. Gill on the spot, but I would welcome Dr. Gill's feedback on that as well.
Thank you, Dr. Gill.
Thank you. The only comment I have, and I don't mean to insult anyone, but well, let me go back with respect to Mr. DC. His initial complaint was that he didn't get typewritten records. You know, I've been in practice for many years. Typewritten notes are a rarity. And I have dealt with a number of insurance companies, and they don't require typewritten notes. I'm inclined to agree that it was a misunderstanding between Dr. Carlson and Mr. DC regarding Mr. Tarleson having typewritten notes. But I had a chance to read Dr. Carlson's notes. I could barely read them myself. And I think Mr. DC's request for further exploration of what his condition was is a fair request that was not properly responded to, in my opinion. I don't think that's very professional, frankly. And it could have been handled differently. And in addition to that, I agree with Dr. Davis-Wilson that there are issues of informed consent. Dr. Carlson had admitted that he can't recall the last time informed consent issues were discussed in an ethics course that he took. Dr. Davis-Wilson talked about the issue of outdated. The ethics standards go back to 2002. There's nothing, informed consent isn't anything new. It's been a significant ethical standard for as long as I have been in practice, and I've been in practice a long time. So it's not outdated. It's been around for a long, long time. And I think it's important that an informed consent be part of the treatment plan and part of moving forward. And I would agree too with the comments made that a documentation is not only to assist in one's provision of services, it's also to protect you legally. If third parties get involved, if somebody asks for records later on, there's clarity as to what proceeded in treatment. And, it assists in the patient care, pure and simple. And to me, there were pieces of this this documentation that were lacking. And so I would agree with Dr. Davis-Wilson regarding her issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. I would agree with both Dr. Gill and Dr. Davis-Wilson, both spot on. I don't have anything to add to it. With those, is there a, you know, I think what I've heard is there's a concern about informed consent, which is the Ethical Code 3.10, and also potentially maybe
H, which is failing, refusing to maintain, retain adequate business and financial professional records pertaining to psychological services provided to a client or patient. Dr. Davis-Wilson, I mean, you're the lead. What are your thoughts? Do you feel as though there are these violations or others?
Yeah, the other one that I would add would be 6.01, which does is the ethics portion of H, essentially. So we have H that's stating failing or refusing to maintain or retain adequate records. Mm-hmm. But then I think it's captured again in the ethics code that talks specifically about the quality of the records. Because I don't think that it's a matter of, I think in some of it, the records fall short of what we would typically see in a file. But if we also looked at what is available to us, then we also have that quality of what's available to us that I think is better captured in 6.01.
So is that a motion then? Do you want to make, is there a...
Yeah, I can make a motion that we go ahead and recommend this to initial interview with the full board. And specific concerns would be 32-2061, number 15, unprofessional conduct, and it would include H, which is the failing to maintain the adequate records, DD, which is the unprofessional conduct, and is the ethics code, and under that to include the 3.10, which is the informed consent, and 6.01, which is the quality of the record keeping.
All right, so we have a motion. Is there a second?
I would second.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. I'd like to thank both parties for being here today. You'll be notified by our board on the next step of the process. Thank you. We're going to move on to our last agenda item, which is 4F, complaint T20-6, Cynthia Williams. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead. Would you like to provide a summary?
Yes. On March 2nd of 2020, the board received a complaint from RD allegating that RD believes that Ms. Williams is practicing outside of her scope or outside of the scope of certified school psychologist and outside of the language that speaks to licensure exemptions for school psychologists. Ms. Williams submitted an evaluation report and invoice to Mesa Public Schools for an IEE of a student that was completed as at Ms. Williams' business, Upright Consultants, LLC. When RD requested that Ms. Williams provide additional credentialing information, such as higher credentials or partnership with properly credentialed psychologists, Ms. Williams opted not to respond to the inquiries. RD's understanding of the limits to the licensure exemption is that practice for certified school psychologists is appropriate when working in a school setting, but private practice is beyond this exemption. Despite repeated attempts to consult with Ms. Williams regarding her practice, she declined to communicate in any way to provide clarification about her practice and credentials. RD did provide for us an invoice, a tax form from the private consultation organization, as well as a copy of the comprehensive evaluation report that outlined the services that were provided to Mesa schools by Ms. Williams. On March 2nd, 2020, board staff sent correspondence to Ms. Williams that indicated that there was concerns of a possible board violation specific to the statute that prohibits the use of any combination of words, initials, or symbols that leads the public to believe the person making the representation is licensed to practice psychology in Arizona. The board did notify the individual that they were not licensed to practice and that they do understand that there is a certified school psychologist role with the Department of Education. And then they did request a response from Ms. Williams. On March 31st, 2020, the board office received Ms. Williams' response in a timely manner via her attorney, Mr. Morton. Mr. Morton states that with all due respect, the board does not have jurisdiction over Ms. Williams, so the complaint should be dismissed. The board does not have jurisdiction over school psychologists. Ms. Williams is employed full-time as a school psychologist for Fountain Hills Unified School District, but she also works as an independent school psychologist as a side job, and those are the services provided through the Upright Upright Consulting. He does state that the work Ms. Williams provides is solely as a school psychologist for other districts, and that the school psychologist, that she's meeting the role of completing the evaluation that's independent of the school. Ms. Williams was asked to perform an IEE for the school, which is exactly what she did. And in this specific case, Ms. Williams has been approved by Mesa Public Schools as an approved vendor. When she was asked to perform the IEE, she did so, produced the report, and all of that's been provided to the board. Ms. Williams was paid by the Mesa School District for those services, so they are not sure why the complaint was filed in the first place. The board does not have jurisdiction over school psychologists, and they cite ARS 32-2075. All of Ms. Williams' activities involve the school setting, and the report itself involved a student at the school. Ms. Williams has been a certified school psychologist since around 1999, and her certification has long been on file with Mesa School District as a previously approved vendor. According to the Arizona Department of Education website, Ms. Williams became certified as a school psychologist in 2016. Board staff appropriately warned about misusing the term psychology or related terms, but it's noted that Ms. Williams uses the designation school psychologist, which is permissible. It is, again, difficult for the individual to understand why another school psychologist reported Ms. Williams, and states that some of what RD reported is not accurate, such as that Ms. Williams opted not to respond to inquiries, but she provided him with her certification, which did not satisfy those inquiries. They suspect that the problem arose because Ms. Williams' report likely had opinions different from those of RD, and regardless, still feel that there's no basis for this complaint. Board staff has, or on May 19th, in request of staff for additional information, a screenshot of the communications with Ms. Williams and RD regarding her credentials was provided. If staff is asking for a file as a student, they would have to obtain that from the school district. Ms. Williams' client was Mesa Public Schools, and staff already has documentation about her dealings with that school district. Mr. Morton also states that in the initial response, they feel the board has no authority over Ms. Williams and board cannot issue any order concerning her. And as a result, neither Mr. Morton nor Ms. Williams will be participating today in the meeting, and they look forward to receiving a letter that the complaint has been dismissed. And that concludes my summary.
All right. Thank you very much. So there is not a party here at all. I just want to confirm that, Ms. Michelson.
To my knowledge, but it might be helpful to check if the complainant RD is present or if Ms. Williams and her attorney are present.
Is either party present? Please unmute and speak up. We would be happy to have you join this meeting. Hearing none. Board members, your thoughts on this case? I guess I'm trying to clarify, or maybe I'd ask Ms. Galvin, as a school psychologist, can you provide services outside of your own school district? Can you provide those kind of consulting services? I think appears to be
under 32-2075A1, and this is the provision of law regarding the exemptions. It provides that a school psychologist employed in a common school, high school, or charter school setting and certified to use that title by the Department of Education if the services or activities are part of the duties of that person's common school, high school, or charter school employment. So you do not need to be a licensed psychologist if you are a school psychologist employed in one of those settings and conducting services and as part of your job in one of those settings.
Is it, can I ask a question? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. Is
it okay for her to conduct an evaluation as a school psychologist in her own private practice, conducting an evaluation?
Not unless it is part of her work as a district or charter school employee.
So as I understand it, then as a school psychologist. I'm really not a school psychologist if I'm not working for a school. I have to be under the umbrella of a school to do be a school psychologist.
To practice psychology. And you are a school psychologist, not licensed by this board, but by the Department of Education. Your scope is within the school district or charter school.
Can I contract? It is a it appears what she did is a contract, right? At 1099 or whatever. So she contracts with the Mesa School District or school district. Is she considered now, is she considered under their umbrella as a school psychologist, as a contractor?
However she is employed, whether that's a 1099, she's under the auspices of that district. Whether she, it's a 1099 or full employment. She cannot go hang her own shingle.
I think she might argue that the referral came from the school. She just happened to conduct the evaluation at her private practice office, but she was still operating under the auspices of being a school psychologist. Would that be accurate?
If the referral came from a school district?
That's my understanding. This was a student in a school district where she worked. So she received that referral from, a family member of a student of one of the schools that she worked at. And in that respect, it's just the issue of whether she can conduct an evaluation separate from school grounds.
Yeah. Was that, I don't know, was a private referral?
Can I just, the W-9 form is with the company Upright Consultant. So the company appears to be is who the W-9 form at. It's not her directly. Or does she sign it? Is that?
And then the W-9 suggests that that's separate from the school setting. Is that what you're getting at?
I'm trying to figure out what the legal connection is, because if I'm working under as Tammy Shreve and I consult as a 1099, I'm basically as kind of a sub. I'm an employee with that company, then I'm under their umbrella. If I'm working for a company who then's hiring me out, then I'm not working. You know what I mean? I'm working for the company. I'm working for it.
Madam Chair, I believe that it stated that she's a sole proprietor. So I believe that the company is solely hers. So she is self-employed through likely for layers of protection. She's self-employed through that rather than 1099ing her, like being a 1099 herself. So it doesn't appear that she's working for a separate agency. And it appears that the referral was specific to the school completing the referral, requesting the services, and paying for the services. So the question there still lies of, as a 1099, does that she then fall under the umbrella of being under the service provision of Mesa Public Schools? And I don't know that the location of where the services matter as much as whether or not it's linked to the Common School or not.
And it's not, and just so I made a mistake, it's not a 1099, it's a W-9, which I'm not sure what that is.
And it says that the reason for the referral is that the mother requested this independent evaluation.
And the school approved, Mesa approved it.
They're required, but that doesn't mean that you can go and have someone who's not authorized to conduct the evaluation.
All right. I guess this to me is a legal issue. It kind of like, was she under the umbrella or not? Is that, I mean, do you guys feel the same? I mean,
yes.
Is that how you feel, Dr. Gill? I mean, I'm just trying to figure I'm trying to figure out this legal link.
Yeah. Under which auspices did she conduct this evaluation?
Right.
Under the school umbrella or under her private practice? Even if she's solo, it's still a private practice. Is it under this Upright, whatever the name is, or is it under the school?
That's where
I'm not clear.
Ms. Galvin, should we go into a call you an exec session and get some legal advice, or do you feel comfortable talking?
Would you prefer, and I would like an opportunity to look into this further, could we table it until next month?
No, You know, if I can make a comment, this case to me is very straightforward. The issue of whether she's conducted under which umbrella is not. We can table that issue, but I would make a motion because of the fact that it's my understanding that she presented herself as a consultant psychologist. We do have jurisdiction when somebody is describing themselves as a psychologist with the word school not being used under the AR 32-2084, and that the motion would be that she's in violation of the law, as I understand it, and that and I think it should be under those conditions sent to the full board for an informal interview. That's
when she represents herself as an independent school psychologist.
Well, there's a term that she used in her report, quote, consultant psychologist, without using the word school.
Her invoice also does not say school. Her invoice also says consultant psychologist.
I think that's where I got it from, the invoice.
I would be in agreement with that. And I think when it goes to the board, you would probably want to discuss the legal link too. And I give Ms. Galvin time to look at that.
Yes.
Ms. Dr. Davis-Wilson, what are your thoughts?
I would be in support of that, yes.
I think that's a great idea. I would feel comfortable with that. Ms. Galvin, are you?
Yes, that's fine. So it's still, the referral to the board would address the question of whether she is practicing or misrepresenting her status as a licensed psychologist. We have the terminology she uses, and the second possible question is whether she practiced outside of her ability conducting this evaluation that wasn't part of her employment with the Fountain Hills School District.
I could ask a question too. Is this argument about jurisdiction, does it have any merit to it? Because it seems to me that when you use the term consulting psychologist, that's under the board's jurisdiction, pure and simple. Doesn't matter whether she's a school psychologist or not. She cannot misrepresent herself as a psychologist when she is a school psychologist. So it seems to me that this issue of jurisdiction is a red herring.
Right. And I would agree. I think you're right, Dr. Gill. We have two issues. Then using the name of psychologist is one, and not clarifying consultant psychologist is not appropriate, and that does fall under our jurisdiction. And I think the second issue is whether she had the legal authority to practice, to do this assessment outside of her regular employment umbrella. And so I think that your motion in regards to utilizing the word psychologist is right on. And then I think we also add a concern that we have regarding her legal authority that we'd want to further pursue at the next meeting. So with the license, what was the, Dr. Gill, what was the citation reference to that?
Well, it's my understanding from reading the documentation, it's under AR 32-2084, in which it addresses the use of certain words such as psychologist. Okay. When you are not a licensed psychologist.
All right. Dr. Davis-Wilson, as the lead, how do you feel?
I would be in support of that. And then I would also just note as well. Let me start with just seconding Dr. Gill's motion.
So just to confirm, the motion is the license, using the license word psychologist inappropriately. And then also, and that's the ARS 32-2084. And then also the concern regarding her legal authority to practice outside of her employment is a concern. We don't have a statute, but it's a concern we'd want to take on.
You do have a statute in the sense that you have a school psychologist who may be practicing outside of the exemption. So a school psychologist is properly exempted from your regulation if they're practicing within the school who employs them. Right. She may be practicing psychology outside of that exemption.
So that's, and that's
tied into 2084.
2084?
Yeah.
So we would want to, so there's, as I hear Dr. Gill say, the concern with utilizing the word psychologist. And the second one is the concern about practicing outside of her exemption.
Correct.
Okay. So that's the motion. And then is that what your second, just want to confirm it. Dr. Gill?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
Well, I just, I is this the appropriate place to talk about their issue of jurisdiction? To me, that's an empty argument. Am I correct to assume that?
Yeah, I would agree.
I think we, yeah, totally agree with that. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, I was going to ask a similar question. And then I also, you know, just as my interpretation of the exemption as I've experienced it in multiple levels, because it also is mirrored on the behavior analyst side, I think the key word is defining the employment. And I think the intent of the exemption is that they're working under the umbrella of services of their employer, that are approved by their employer, that are overseen by the Arizona Department of Education. And so I think that's the piece that I'm sure Ms. Galvin will get back to us as we move forward as to what that looks like then in how it interprets when that individual isn't employed by the district.
Okay. Or employed by the district or 1099 by the district, whatever, but conducting psychological services outside of that employment.
Yes.
Okay.
And Jennifer, what agenda will this go on?
Most likely August. July is a very full agenda already, so I don't anticipate that it would be on that one, likely August.
Thank you. I don't think we have a vote.
Oh, yeah. So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Okay, before we get to our last agenda item, which is us ending the meeting, I just want to thank everybody, staff. You guys are great. Ms. Galvin, thank you so much. Dr. Gill, Dr. Davis-Wilson, I really appreciate you. I appreciate your background and knowledge. It's always a joy to work with both of you. So anyways, is there a motion to end this meeting?
So moved.
Got a motion. Second?
Second.
All right. You got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. It's over. Thank you so much for Zooming.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.